The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the Triangle, from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's start off today with 13 things, soaring facts about hot air balloons. 1. More than a century before the Wright brothers' flights in Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, brothers Joseph Michael and Jacques Etienne Montgolfier launched an unmanned 500-pound balloon over Annonay, France, that stayed aloft for about 10 minutes. The year was 1783, and King Louis XVI, soon wanted a demonstration. So the Montgolfier sent up a sheep, a duck, and a rooster the Queen, Marie Antoinette, and 130,000 other people witnessed the historic flight over Versailles. The animals landed safely. 2. France became the epicenter of ballooning, and Americans in Paris, including Benjamin Franklin, John Adams, and John Jay, jumped on the bandwagon. Travelers may hereafter literally pass from country to country on the wings of the wind, wrote Jay, who took time out from negotiating the Treaty of Paris to watch a flight. Ballooning was still a big spectator sport. The largest event in the United States, the Albuquerque International Balloon Fiesta, attracted almost 900,000 people over 9 days in 2018. A meteorological phenomenon known as the Albuquerque Box, predictable wind patterns that let pilots land close to where they launched, have made the area a ballooning hotspot. 4. Commonly made from heat-resistant nylon or polyester, the colorful, usually 80-foot-tall balloon part, called the envelope, is laid out on the ground pre-flight to be partially filled with cold air. Then, to create the lift required for takeoff, the air is heated by propane burners attached below the mouth of the envelope. 5. The highest anyone has ever flown in a hot air balloon is 68,986 feet. Jeez, if they'd gone 14 more feet, they'd been 69,000. Nearly twice the cruising altitude of commercial airliners. At those heights, the people in the basket needed to wear oxygen masks. 6. Another record. On January 17, 1991, entrepreneur Richard Branson and Swedish engineer Per Lindstrand became the first aeronauts, that's the official term, to cross the Pacific Ocean. They set off from Japan and traveled more than 4,700 miles in about 46 hours. There was no cheering crowd to greet them, however. The men landed on a frozen lake in the Yukon and had to be airlifted out. 7. Records are all the more remarkable because, unlike airplanes, balloons are very hard to steer. The wind at 100 feet might be going east, while the wind at 200 feet might be going west, says Becky Wigeland, curator of the National Balloon Museum in Indianola, Iowa. So you just keep up going up and down until you get the wind that you want. That's all you can do, she says. 8. That doesn't stop balloon pilots from doing some crazy stunts. One of their favorite games is called Hare and Hound. One balloon, the hare, launches first. Then all the other balloons, the hounds, chase the hare. When the hare lands, the hounds try to land as close as they can to their prey. 9. The most famous balloon hunt happened during the Civil War. An aeronaut named Thaddeus Lowe convinced President Abraham Lincoln of the merits of hot air balloon reconnaissance over the first Battle of Bull Run. Lowe went on to command the Union Balloon Corps, with mixed results. The Confederate Army's attempt to burst his balloons earned Lowe the title of the most shot at man in the war. 10. It's no surprise. Lowe survived. Flying in a hot air balloon is very safe. Since 1964, the National Transportation Safety Board has investigated 799 accidents involving balloons in the United States. Of those, 73 resulted in fatal injuries, and I dare say most of those were for running into power lines. 11. The greatest balloon faux pas actually took place in a movie. Remember when Dorothy piles into the Wizard of Oz to fly home to Kansas? The writing on the envelope reads State Fair Omaha, which is in Nebraska. To be fair, novelist Timothy Schaefer has pointed out that L. Frank Baum's novel, The Wizard, did come from Omaha. 12. Balloons seem to inspire creative flights of fancy. For instance, a story on the April 13, 1844 edition of the New York Sun had an intriguing headline. Astounding news! The Atlantic crossed in 3 days. Signal triumph of Mr. Monk's Mason's flying machines. The tale of the balloon that crossed the ocean before safely landing near Charleston, South Carolina, riveted readers. The problem? The story was fake news, written by an ambitious journalist. His name? Edgar Allan Poe. Number 13. The reactions that hot air balloons engineer have led to fizzy traditions. Back in the 19th century France, balloons would terrify the locals, so pilots packed champagne to appease people where they landed. Something similar happened one Sunday morning this past June, when balloonist Mark Stodowski unexpectedly landed in the backyard of a homeowner in Stowe, Massachusetts. "Oh, do you mind?" Stodowski asked the surprised man, according to the Boston Globe. "No, you're cool," he replied. Stodowski handed a bottle of champagne to the man, then went back to bed. Anti-social media. Facebook is for people who can't face books. All in a day's work. There's a lady, it looks like a bookstore, and the sign above the books, the shelves with all the books in it, says mystery. And one column has the butler did it, the other has the maid, and the third has the chauffeur. The new busboy was just 16. And because it was his first job, we were all impressed with how well he had done on his first day, which is why we're surprised the next day when he didn't show up for his shift. Then an hour late, he came running in, red-faced and breathless. I'm sorry, he said. I forgot I had a job. I've never wanted to know the answer to anything bad enough to ask a question at a meeting that's running 30 minutes over time. I was in my patrol car by a blinking red light, the equivalent of a stop sign, when I watched an elderly man drive straight through without even slowing down. I quickly hit the siren and pulled him over. "Why did you drive through the red light?" I asked him. "I didn't," he said. "I saw you." He shook his head. "I went through between the blinks," he said. Former ambassador Richard Hollenbrook was a brilliant but polarizing figure. Walter Isaacson wrote in the New York Times Book Review, "When someone once commented that Holbrook was his own worst enemy, a national security advisor he had worked with snapped, not as long as I'm around." One of my math students got his hand caught in a go-kart chain and lost a third of his fingers, of his finger. He missed a few days of class. When he returned, I asked if his injury hindered him in any way. He was surprisingly upbeat. "No, it actually helps me," he said. "I can now work fractions." Horrible bosses. Boss's Day is October 16th, which is tomorrow when this plays. Here are some managers who won't be getting much appreciation. A Chinese sales group made news back in 2016 when it came out the executives forced employees who'd missed their goals to drink a cocktail of grain alcohol and live mealworms. The workers, though disgusted, didn't seem all that fazed, said one. "We have also eaten live squid and ants before." The lumberyard where I worked was experienced losses from theft. Our vice president ordered polygraphs for every employee. A week later, on a routine patrol, the police caught the thief loading a truck with material from the yard. It was the vice president. Tania Singer was a renowned neuroscientist and director to the Max Planck Institute for Eugen Cognitive and Brain Sciences in Germany. But she was forced to resign after reports of her bullying became public. Whenever everyone had a meeting with her, there was at least an even chance he or she would come out in tears, one colleague told ScienceMag.org. Singer's field of expertise? Empathy. The food on your plate. I am grapes, a divine fruit to drink. In 2017, a single sentence reverberated through the internet, skidding across social media and breathless blogs. They did surgery on a grape they had. A video showed a tiny robot making delicate incisions in my thin purple skin before pulling back the translucent layer to reveal my juicy yellow-green flesh below. The video was meant to demonstrate the surgical tool's exacting abilities, but the sheer absurdity of the sentence, "they did surgery on a grape," caught on with millions, and I became a nonsensical internet meme. The popularity long predates my online fame, of course. After all, I also become wine. A resident of North America since before the Pilgrims, my native varieties, including the North American Fox and Scuppernong, were not great bases for wine, but clusters of meat growing in Asia and Europe were. Early humans there learned that given the right conditions, I fermented well. Just harvest my bunches, crush them to a pulp, and let the good times roll. It wasn't until later that modern microbiology explained that my skins, if they haven't been peeled off by a mini robot, naturally carried the yeast necessary for fermentation. The Romans then spread winemaking to just about every land they conquered. Perhaps Julius Caesar should have said, Vini, Vidi, Vini. Alas, the entire wine world has come almost lost in the 1800s. The first warning started with a guy named Thomas Jefferson. After working in Europe on a diplomatic mission, Jefferson took a keen interest in French wines and decided to see if he could make good vin stateside in his Monticello estate. He planted European grapevines in his fields, then watched as they withered and died. Though they didn't know it, pests native to American soil had wreaked havoc on that European rootstock. More disastrously, curious Europeans had shipped American grapevines to their shores to do their own experimenting. Those vines carried tiny aphid-like bugs called Phylloxeras, likely the same culprits in Jefferson's failed wine, making venture. By the late 1800s, the pestilence Jefferson encountered had destroyed as much as 90% of European vineyards, sending a centuries-old agriculture tradition in ruin. The scientists who eventually figured out how to save Europe's wine industry added yet another twist to my cross-Atlantic story. Their solution was to graft old world wine varietals into, wait for it, aphid-resistant American rootstock. That's right. Almost all of the world's great European wine drunk today is grown on good old American roots. As the Europeans were grappling with the loss of their wine grapes, a minister, physician, and teetotaler in Vineland, New Jersey, Thomas Bramwell Welch, intolerant of the American penchant for booze, set out to stop my juice from fermenting into wine. As a physician, Dr. Welch was well aware of Louis Pasteur's work on pasteurization to render milk safe to drink. Dr. Welch decided to try the same thing, but with my juice, which he heated to kill the yeast that would otherwise transport it into alcohol. With that, shelf-stable grape juice was born. Known as the unfermented wine, Dr. Welch's product started in 1893 World's Fair, and America, on the road to prohibition as it was hooked. By 1913, Secretary of State William Jennings Bryan served the stuff in lieu of alcohol at a formal, and I'm guessing wildly boring, diplomatic event. Sober adults and kids alike had a sweet new beverage to love, and as a consequence, a whole lot more calories in their teeth. Dr. Welch, who was also a dentist, probably hadn't predicted that unfortunate side effect. Though you may not be as gregarious afterward, humans find me pure pleasure to eat, too. Even my most conventional varieties, such as Green Thompson Seedless and Purple Flame Seedless, can be happily propped by the handful into your mouth or set on a cheese board to tame a funky blue. If your health is your concern, you may want to seek the darker skin varieties. The deeper hued pigments are the botanical world's most plentiful source of Revitrol, an antioxidant credited with anti-aging properties, though frankly often overhyped ones. Of course, I also come as a mass-produced dried snack, and generations of schoolchildren know. Anyone who lived through the 80s remembers those all red boxes of raisins. Don't remind me about how the most disposable Halloween handout. I know. You may also remember my great pop culture moment, TV ad starring claymation members of the popular California Raisins dancing to I Heard It Through the Grapevine, the Raisins recording of Marvin Gaye's hit landed on the Billboard Hot 100. These days, the raisin industry is shriveling, and the number of acres of famed farm Thompson Seedless grapes, the variety grown for raisins, has halved in the past 19 years. To combat the problem of those little red boxes disappearing, SunMade, the company that owns about 40% of the raisin market, recently hired new management, inducing sour raisin product, and launched an ad campaign tapping into the nostalgia for this classic snack. And frankly, if I can't win in pop culture, ready-made meme that I am, I don't know what can. And then there's a little thing about homemade raisins. Spray a baking sheet with nonstick cooking spray, scatter seedless grapes on the pan, and cook at a 225-degree Fahrenheit oven until they are shriveled but still slightly plump. About 4 hours. How long the steaks will depend on the type of grapes you use, the heating cycles of your oven, and other variables. So check often, allowing raisins to cool, then use as a metal spatula to separate any stuck ones from the baking sheet. Sometimes, life isn't a bowl of cherries. 10-year-old, Mom, what's a metaphor? Me. My life is a train wreck. 10-year-old. I know, Mom, but what's a metaphor? Nightmares train your brain, the world of medicine. In two related studies, researchers at the University of Geneva in Switzerland used brain scans to show that the same brain regions are activated when we experience fear in dreams and in real life. What's more, people who have scary dreams more often are less afraid of frightening images when they are awake. This suggests that nightmares help us release dangerous scenarios in a safe environment, which helps us to know how to handle the threats better when they actually occur. A heart-healthy diet may prevent hearing loss. Oh, that's interesting. Over a 22-year period, women who mostly followed the Mediterranean diet or the DASH, dietary approaches to stop hypertension, diet were about 30% less likely to develop moderate or severe hearing loss than those who didn't. Both diets reduce or eliminate red meat and processed foods, instead of emphasizing fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and beans and other legumes, all of which help prevent oxidation and inflammation. This finding, based on a study of more than 81,000 women ages 27 to 44, confirms previous research that has found an association between a healthy diet and reduced risk of hearing loss. Chewing gum that delivers vitamins. A small study found that chewing gum fortified with vitamins could be an effective way to get people nutrients. These gums, sold as Smart Gum or Get More, work best to deliver water-soluble vitamins such as B6 and C. A recent analysis of data from the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey showed that almost 10% of Americans are deficient of these two vitamins. Fat-soluble vitamins such as A and E were not completely released from the gum. New test for prostate cancer. A new ultrasound process called shear-wave elastography, SWE, may soon help doctors spot prostate cancer with greater accuracy and reliability than current methods, which include physical examination of the rectal area, prostate-specific antigen, PSA, blood tests, MRI scans, and biopsies. Cancerous tissue is stiffer than normal tissue, so the shear waves are slowed as they pass through it. The technology detected 89% of prostate cancers, and it could identify more aggressive cancers than those beginning to spread. Measuring chronic pain. Relieving pain is a priority in healthcare, so it's perhaps surprising that pain assessments is such an inexact science. A patient's pain is usually self-reported on a scale of 1 to 10. Now several teams of researchers are attempting to develop more objective measuring methods. The studies are looking at a wide variety of sources of pain and ways to stop them. A group of Australian scientists discovered that immune cells associated with chronic pain, which is usually related to an underlying condition such as arthritis, have a different natural color from cells in acute pain, usually the result of injury, or no pain. They develop a blood test that reads the color of cells instantly, which might one day allow doctors to detect the severity of pain and tailor treatment accordingly. Another blood test, developed by Indiana University School of Medicine researchers, not only measures pain severity, but also helps match biomarkers to a patient's blood and potential medications. The biomarker is like a fingerprint, explains study author Alexander Nicusoli, MD, PhD. We match it against a prescription database to see which compound could normalize the signature. We found some compounds, including SC560, a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug, and pyridoxine, which is vitamin B6, that have been used for decades to treat other things, pair the best with the biomarkers. Vitamin A can weaken the bones. A Swedish study found that mice who consumed excess vitamin A, equivalent to 4.5 to 13 times the recommended dietary allowances in humans, had thinner bones after just 8 days. This suggests that people shouldn't take too much vitamin A through food or supplements, especially if they're up to risk for osteoporosis. A drug that reduces hot flashes. Researchers at the Mayo Clinic have found a new option to reduce the frequency and intensity of hot flashes in breast cancer survivors who are unable to take hormone replacement therapy, the typical treatment. Unlike other hormonal treatments, the hot flashes, oxybutynin does not interfere with tamoxifen, the drug many survivors take to help prevent a recurrence. Your True Stories, by 100 words. My favorite barista, one morning, I told my husband jokingly that he dropped the ball because he hadn't made me coffee and I was having trouble getting motivated to start my day. My 5-year-old son overheard me and asked me to explain what dropped the ball meant. A few minutes later, he came into our bedroom holding an overflowing coffee mug with a dishcloth underneath it to catch the drips. He said to my husband, "You dropped the ball, but I picked the ball up," and he handed me the worst-tasting, most watered-down, but sweetest cup of coffee ever. Meeting Mick. It was late one Saturday night in August 1979. My buddies and I were wandering somewhat aimlessly through Greenwich Village in New York City. Looking for girls? A late-night place to eat? I can't quite remember. In time, our gang divided into two groups, separated by 13 feet or so. My group, the one tagging behind, decided to pull one of those silly grade school pranks by ducking into a dark recessed doorway and see how far the front group would go before realizing we were gone. It worked all too well as our friends walked on cluelessly, not noticing our absence. Second later, a huge and high-end black Mercedes came to a screeching halt directly in front of us, dropping off a scrawny, long-haired fellow who proceeded to walk slowly in our direction. Upon seeing us, he jolted to a halt, apparently wanting to get to the door that the five of us were now blocking. Time seemed to drag as we stood there, him staring at us and us at him, no one saying a word. Then it struck me that this guy looked very familiar, almost too familiar to believe. After an extended stare down, he got up the courage to squeeze his way past us to the door, where he pressed an intercom button and announced without much urgency, "It's Mick!" What happened next was a blur. The door opening, a crack, a mysterious hand reaching out to yank this Mick fellow into the building, and the door slamming shut as quickly as it had opened. Just like that, he was gone. As we exited the doorway to catch up with our friends, now a full block away and dumbfounded by our absence, I looked up at the front of the building to get some idea of where we had been hiding. That was when I signed for Electric Lady Studios. We were the only partway down the block when a group of young women came running toward us. As they rushed by, they asked frantically, "Did you see him? Did you see Mick Jagger?" We all puffed out our chests and calmly responded, "Yeah," as we hurried to catch up with our friends, who, of course, refused to believe us. And the comment is, sometimes 100 words just aren't enough. An unlikely intruder. While we were out, our security company alerted us that our home alarm had been activated. Because we couldn't return to check it, the police were called, but they found nothing. Later, the security company called asking whether we had any pets roaming around, because the alarm had gone off again. We have none. We came home, the alarm still blaring, and I called the company. They directed me to the room where the active sensor was. I was quite chagrined when I saw the helium-filled balloon was dancing in front of it. Technology troubles. After turning 75, I was hospitalized for an arrhythmic heartbeat and struggled with insomnia. So I ordered a blindfold to help me sleep and a smartwatch to monitor my heart and sleep patterns. I was astounded at the watch features. One night I woke up and pushed the watch face to check the time. Blank. I tried again and again without success. Geez, I thought, I just paid big bucks for a watch that treated lasted less than a week. Finally, I noticed a flicker of light. Only then did it occur to me that I was still wearing this blindfold. Fascinating facts. What happened to great nicknames? Machine Gun Kelly, the Big Bopper, Cool Papa Bell? We need more fun names like that. And there's a picture here with a whole bunch of different things on there. The Splendid Splitter. And Smiley Miley, Slim, Jay-Z, The Kitchen, Whoopi. When my father was growing up in the 1930s, Brooklyn, every boy in his neighborhood had a nickname. There was Google and A.B. Ashcan, born Abraham Ashcan. Even Dad, a Jew growing up in an Irish neighborhood, had one. He was Murph. Sadly, the nickname seemed to be on the wane. And there may be a good reason. In Dad's day, the pool of names was relatively small. In 1950, there were only about 10,000 names in the Social Security list of those given to five or more babies. In 2018, it was over 32,000, says Pamela Redmond Satran, co-founder of MameBerry.com. In past generations, she says, with more people named John in the same classroom, company, and even family, it became necessary to come up with ways to tell them apart, which could mean calling them Big John or JJ or J-Man. Too bad for nicknames. A good one tells a story and can be an endless source of delight. Take Douglas Corrigan. In 1938, the aviator was scheduled to fly from New York City to Long Beach, California. Instead, he ended up in Ireland. A nickname was born there, Wrong Way Corrigan. So let's start a movement to keep nicknames alive by bestowing them on everyone we know. It's easy. A degree from Harvard wasn't needed to take one look at a slender country crudist Otis Dewey Whitman and say, hey, let's call him Slim Whitman instead. On the flip side, when 300-pound William Perry hit the NFL in 1985, his enormous nickname, the Refrigerator, seemed to be the ultimate moniker, and so it was until 400-pound Nate the Kitchen Newton arrived a few years later. An odd habit might lend itself to creative label. Reputed mother mobster Louis Anastasio had a killer sense of humor, as evidenced by his tendency to laugh any time he heard of a murder, hence the nickname Louis Ha Ha. Karen Elaine Johnson, a.k.a. Whoopi Goldberg, told the New York Times that she couldn't stop passing gas on stage. When someone compared it to a whoopee cushion, it stuck. Other times, a distinctive wardrobe choice can turn into something permanent. One night, when he was just starting out with a band called the Phoenix Jazzmen, musician Gordon Sumner took to the stage wearing a black and yellow striped sweater. A bandmate thought he looked just like a bee and dubbed him Sting. When Destiny Hope Cyrus was a baby, her sunny dispositions bet her father, singer Billy Ray Cyrus, to call her Smiley, which mortified into Miley. Not all showbiz nicknames are as charming. Richard Henry Sellers' older brother was stillborn. His parents apparently never got over his death and called Richard by his late brother's name, Peter, which is the name the great British actor took. Over the years, certain professions have been especially welcome of nicknames. Give props to rock stars. Think Jay-Z, Sean Corey Carter, or Snoop Dogg, Calvin Cardoza Broadhouse Jr., who are keeping the tradition alive. The same goes for baseball, which has a long history of them. Shoeless Joe Jackson, Ted the Splendid Splinter Williams, Hammer and Hank Aaron. Of course, they're all pretty tame, considering that locker room is a hive of brilliant belittlement. Pitcher Mars Wasopowski's tongue defying consonant dragon name prompted him, his teammates to dub him Scrabble. People are always calling the politicians names, and a few are even printable. When Arnold Schwarzenegger became governor of California after his Hollywood career in the Terminator movies, someone coined a brilliant mashup, the Governator. And then our nation's ninth president, William Henry Harrison, passed away a month after taking office. He was replaced by his vice president, John Tyler, who lost out on the nickname lottery when he was referred to decisively as his accidency. The toughest person to create a nickname for may be your own significant other. A person lamented on Reddit.com, I once called my girlfriend Muffin Top. Yeah, that didn't end so well. On the other hand, my wife started calling me Poop in the most endearing way possible. Example, Poop, I love you. Or Poop, I need a hug. At first I was a little taken aback, but eventually started calling her the same name. Now Poop is the most commonly used word in our household. So ready to reband everyone you know? Just remember, this is about nicknames. Even the lamest ones say you are important enough to me that I took the time to something silly and call you OK Pookie Bear. Say hey! Readers share their favorite nickname stories. In order to look sophisticated for college, I gave myself a perm. The only effect it had on my red hair was to make it look wild and unruly. One day a classmate asked if I had tried out for the Olympics. I told her no. She said, well, you'd make a great torch. I've been torch ever since. Denise Bright. In the Army, I was stationed with a guy named Swamper, short for Swamp Billy. He explained that he was called that because there ain't no hills in Alabama. Douglas Aikens. Friends of ours had a daughter who went by Mac. Curious, I asked her parents, how did you come up with Mac? They replied, middle-aged carelessness, William Kent. I was called Charlie Brown as a kid because I used to collect Peanuts books. Then it evolved into something else. While in high school and college, I ran for office 22 times and came in second, read last each time. Then one year, I coached a baseball team that finished the season 2-18. One of those victories was by forfeit. Charlie Brown, it turned out, was a perfect fit, Dale Hardy. Garage. My Italian immigrant grandfather had a hard time with Gerard. Gerard Forgone, Pomona, California. And with that, we roll over to Consumer Reports. And a big, big headline on this page. Cable wants you back. After losing customers to a host of streaming services and facing competition for new companies, traditional cable says it's cheaper and better. We help you decide which option is best for your entertainment needs and a budget. And there's a picture of a guy holding a whole bunch of cable wires in a fist. Every year, more Americans decide to fire their traditional pay TV provider. whether that's a cable service or a satellite TV company. In 2018, the traditional U.S. pay TV providers lost more than 3 million subscribers, according to industry analyst Lichtman Research Group. One option for so-called cord cutters is to sign up for Sling TV, DirecTV, Now, or one of the other cable replacement streaming services that have sprung up in recent years to supply the broadcast and cable channels over the Internet. Remember, to do this, you still need a decent broadband service, and that's likely to come from the same company that supplies your TV service in the first place. If you're thinking of going the cord-cutter route, the decision is more complex than it was just a year ago. CR's advice then was to make a list of your favorite channels, find a cable replacement service that provided them, and then simply sit back and count your savings each month. That process still works, but the math has changed significantly. Almost every cable replacement streaming service has hiked prices recently, and channel lineups seem to change every few months. Prices are also rising for on-demand streaming video service such as Netflix, and major media companies are getting ready to launch their own services, adding consumer choices but also confusion. Meanwhile, cable companies are trying to hang on to subscribers by promoting limited packages or discounted prices. This new marketplace competition is a boon for consumers, who no longer have to tolerate the old take-it-or-leave-it days of cable TV. Now we have lots of choices when it comes to programming and pricing. However, putting together your household's strategy for TV entertainment is trickier now. Whether you decide to stick with cable, opt to cut the cord and sign up with a cable replacement service, or decide to just stream videos from the services such as Hulu or Netflix, you might not get everything you want from a single service or even two. It's pretty clear the growing number of options has made it much more confusing for consumers, says Dan Rayburn, principal analyst at Median Research of Frost & Sullivan. More people will find themselves having to pay for and manage content across multiple services rather than get everything from a single provider. The juggling act is underway in many households with so-called stackers, people who subscribe to multiple streaming services on the rise. More than 70% of U.S. households are using streaming devices, services subscribed to more than one, according to research firm Ampere Analysts, just under the quarter that subscribe to these services, and nearly 20% sign on to four or more services. That's confusing. It can be expensive, too. In many of these homes, the monthly cost for streaming is approaching or exceeding a traditional cable bill. If you subscribe to a cable replacement service, a few premium channels such as HBO and Stars, plus Netflix, Amazon Prime, Video, and maybe a Major League Baseball streaming package, you might not be saving money by cord cutting. In this report, we'll help you decide whether cable TV packages or cable replacement streaming services make the most sense for you, or whether you'd be better off with neither of these options. Quite a few people get by with just a streaming service, such as Hulu or Netflix, especially if they can get good TV reception using an antenna. But we'll also give you a rundown on streaming services you might not know about, including free options to help you choose a streaming media device across video over the web. The world of TV entertainment was easy for people to understand, but the lack of choice was frustrating. The new world is complicated, but ultimately has that much more to offer. What it costs to watch TV. The legions of Americans abandoning cable TV aren't necessarily going on a content diet. Many are stacking a variety of online services, video services, to get an a la carte combo of channels, shows, and movies. The chart below, and I'll talk about it in a second, shows just how many services you can get for the same cost of an average cable TV package. Each service scratches a different niche. YouTube TV has 70-plus live channels. Amazon Prime Video, HBO Now, Hulu, and Netflix offer original shows and movies. Cut out a few services and you can save plenty of money relative to a typical cable bill. But the math is getting less friendly to streaming. The channels at right show the service how several major online video services have raised their prices in the last few years. One big advantage relative to cable, though, is no tacked-on fees. Streaming versus cable, and there's a graph here that shows YouTube at $50, Netflix at $18, Amazon at $9, HBO Now at $15, Hulu at $8, and Disney at $7 for $103 versus $102 for a straight cable. Rising cost of cable replacement services. DirecTV and YouTube TV has risen from $30 to almost $50. And Sling TV has gone from $20 to about $25. And the rising cost of Netflix has risen from about $8 all the way up now to about $14. I'm sorry, to $13. And the premium plan to $18. Cable versus streaming live. If you like flipping through broadcasts and cable channels such as ABC, CNN, and HGTV, you have two main options. You can stick with cable or satellite TV, which have been around for decades, or you can switch to one of several cable replacement services that stream live TV channels over the web. Either way, you'll be able to watch broadcast and cable networks, catching the news or the Thursday night sitcoms as they air. The pros and cons of these options are laid out on the next two pages. By contrast, Netflix and other on-demand streaming services are not channels per se, or even collections of channels. Rather, they're better thought of as libraries of TV shows and movies that you watch whenever you want. The case for cable. People are so used to hating their cable companies that it can be hard to recall what made cable so impressive to begin with. Dozens, even hundreds of channels, all available around the clock, and most of the time, cable TV just works. You don't suffer delays or buffering because of bandwidth limitations or a balky Wi-Fi network, the way you might with streaming service. Here's why you might want to keep or maybe reconsider a traditional pay TV package. Convenient billing, familiar layouts. If you get TV and internet access from the same company, you get one bill for both services, and you're already familiar with how the program guide works and what channels you've been flipping through since. Well, forever. That's not always how it works with streaming services. Cheaper, skinnier plans. Cable companies are coming up with less expensive, stripped-down plans to compete with cable replacement streaming service. For example, Cox has a plan that costs around $35 per month, and Charter has a $45 per month Spectrum Select plan that serves up about 125 channels. These low prices are in line with many streaming TV plans, which typically start at $40 to $50 per month. And better cable boxes. Bulky, old-fashioned set-top boxes are largely a thing of the past, at least for the major TV providers. Instead, many companies now offer next-generation set-top boxes with modern interfaces and support for newer TV features, such as 4K video with high dynamic range. Some now offer apps that let you access online streaming services such as Netflix and YouTube. More cable boxes also include voice capability and compatibility with Amazon, Alexa, or Google Assistant, so you can use voice command to change channels or search for shows and movies. And the case against. Consumer Report members typically give low scores to the cable companies in our annual surveys, dinging them for value and customer service. One problem is cost. The average annual bill for a TV service was more than $1,200 in 2018, according to Kagan, a unit of S&P Global Marketing Intelligence. That's over $100 per month, just for TV. And many people find their bills are higher than what they anticipated when they signed up. Over the last several years, cable companies have begun to impose new fees for services that were previously included in the base rate for services, as Jonathan Schwantes, Senior Policy Counsel at Consumer Reports. The tacked on charges, which include broadcast TV and regional sports fees, keep rising. These days, the rate you see in an advertisement may only be about three-quarters of the total bill that comes in the mail once fees and taxes are added in. The case for streaming alternatives. Generation of cable TV viewers have complained about paying for channels they didn't want, and to make things worse, most consumers didn't have a choice among the providers in their neighborhoods. Today's cable replacement streaming services are addressing both problems. The half-dozen or so services on the market offer more than one tier of service, going from as few as 33 channels to 140-plus channels. That boosts your odds of finding a mix of content that feels right for the price, and if you change your mind, you can quickly switch to another tier or even a different company. No appointment with the cable guy or satellite dish installer needed. Here's why you might want to switch to a cable replacement service. Lower prices. Even with recent price hikes, most of the cable replacement plans cost less than half as much as your average pay TV bill, according to market research firm eMarketer. Admittedly, for far less programming, you can get a bunch of channels for as little as $15 per month, more diverse services that offer 60 or 70 channels, including local broadcast and cable channels such as CNN and HGTV, are typically priced around $45 or $50 monthly. Compared to basic cable, that's cheap. No box rental. Most cable companies require you to rent a set-top box for a monthly fee of $10 or so, which can add up more than $100 annually. Receivers with DVRs can cost even more to rent. By contrast, you access a streaming service using an app or a smart TV or a streaming service that plugs into your set, such as Roku Streaming Stick for an Apple TV. You can buy a streaming player outright for as little as $30, and there are no reoccurring hardware charges. No confusing fees. The aggravating, hard-to-understand charges you find on KVTV bills don't show up on invoices from the cable replacement streaming services. You may choose to pay extra each month for more DVR storage or for premium channels, but those are optional charges for added services. And the case against. It's true that cable replacement services deliver broadcast and cable channels over the Internet, but there are caveats. Live local broadcasts aren't available from every service. In every TV market, and entire channels are missing from certain services. Just as one example, Sling TV doesn't have CBS anymore in the country. You need to check carefully to make sure a particular plan delivers the channels you want. The savings vary, too. Cable replacement services are still typically less expensive than cable TV, but the gap is eroding. Most of the companies raised monthly rates by $5 or $10 earlier this year. And services may limit how many users can access the service at one time. For instance, the base plan from DirecTV Now and Hulu, live TV just let two devices play content simultaneously, although you can often add users for $5 or so per month. Live TV services want you to drop cable. DirecTV Now, $50 to $70 per month for features plans like the satellite service, but without the dish. You get more than 45 live TV channels in the basic plan, plus on-demo titles and even HBO. Fubal TV, $55 per month, a cable-style streaming service for sports fans. The base plan has about 100 channels with live sports shows and movies, plus a cloud DVR that you can add DVR storage for $10 per month and 30 extra channels for $6 more. Hulu Plus Live TV, $45 per month. A good option for those who like both local channels and cable networks, because you also get everything in Hulu's $6 per month streaming library. You get more than 60 live and on-demand channels, including TV shows, movies, and Hulu originals, including a cloud DVR. You can pay more to get more storage or additional storage. Sling TV, $25 to $40 per month. An option for cord cutters is on a budget. Sling TV offers two $25 plans, Sling Orange and Sling Blue, plus a $40 option with about 50 channels that combines both. Orange has ESPN but no locals, Blue has NBC and Fox but no ESPN. You can pay for additional channel packs. A cloud DVR costs $5 per month. Sony PlayStation View, $50 to $85 per month. The streaming service that gets closest to the cable TV package. You get between 50 and about 100 live TV and on-demand channels, including local broadcast, regional sports networks, and cable channels. The priciest plan includes HBO and Showtime. A cloud DVR with 28G storage is included. YouTube TV, $50 per month. A good choice for those looking to save money without giving up sports or major cable channels. YouTube TV offers 70-plus broadcast and cable channels, plus major sports networks such as CBS Sports, ESPN, and Fox Sports. A cloud DVR with unlimited storage for up to 9 months is included. How live TV packages cost compare. Skinny. Cable, $35 plus. Cox TV Starter advertised at $25 per month at $10 broadcast TV fee and a $3 mini box rental, plus taxes. 75-plus channels, local broadcasts from all major networks in most markets, and a smattering of cable channels, no DVR available. Streaming, $15, AT&T Watch TV. Low-cost plan that's free to some AT&T mobile subscribers. It has 35-plus cable networks, but no local broadcast. You also get thousands of on-demand shows and movies. is limited to one user at a time, and it lacks a DVR, but has 72-hour look-back feature for shows that you have aired. Basic. Cable, $80 plus. Comcast Digital Starter. Advertised at $60 per month, add up to $10 for broadcast TV, and $8.25 for a regional sports fee, plus taxes. 140-plus channels, broadcast TV, plus cable channel. Price guaranteed for only 1 year, and service is limited to one TV. Streaming, $50. YouTube TV, 70-plus channels, including all the major broadcast networks in many markets. Cloud DVR with unlimited storage for up to 9 months is included with these people. Can use the service at a time. Pay $5 to $9 per month extra for AMC, Showtime, or Stars. HBO is not available. Premium. Cable, $110 plus. Spectrum Gold. Advertised at $85, at $7.50 for a cable box. DVR, $5 for DVR service, $12 for broadcast TV plus taxes. 200-plus channels, including the major broadcast networks, and many cable channels, including HBO, Showtime, Stars, and the Movie Channel. Streaming, $85. Sony PlayStation VU Ultra. About 100 local and cable channels, including HBO and Showtime. A sports pack with NBC and Fox Sports channels. And NFL. Red Zone costs an extra $10 per month. A cloud DVR stores shows for up to 28 days. Streaming on demand. In the beginning, there was Netflix. Since then, on-demand streaming options have expanded by the dozens. Some, such as Amazon Prime Video and Hulu, compete with Netflix by providing lots of movies, reruns of TV episodes, and their own original content, including some of the most highly regarded shows being made now. But the streaming world is still changing a lot. New streaming services continue to launch, including three coming soon from major tech and entertainment companies. Beyond the big guys, a number of streaming services cater to niche interests such as documentaries and classic films. Here's the ever-changing world of streaming as it exists in early 2019. The big three. Netflix. Netflix is still the chest-beating gorilla of the streaming jungle. It has largest subscription base, and it offers unlimited streaming of TV shows, movies, comedy specials, and original programming. Netflix prices have been climbing, most recently by 13 to 18% for its three plans. What's new? The basic standard definition option now costs $9 per month, while the most popular standard plan, which gets you HD quality, costs $13. The premium plan, which lets you stream in more screens simultaneously and includes 4K content, costs $16 per month. The increasing price isn't the only reason some of the shine is coming off Netflix platform. We'll be losing a lot of content owned by Disney after that company launches its own streaming service. Notable Netflix originals, Stranger Things, The Umbrella Academy, and Chef's Table. Amazon Prime Video. Many people think of Amazon Prime Video as free, and it is, sort of. If you're already paying the company's $119 annual fee to get two-day shipping on purchases, this service has loads of movies and television shows and a growing roster of great original programming. Prime also lets you add movie channels via its Amazon Channel service. What's new? You don't save any money by subscribing to CBS, All Access, HBO, or Showtime this way, but it adds convenience. Your payments must just go through your Amazon account, no separate sign-in or billing setup needed, and you can access all the content through Amazon Prime instead of jumping out and then launching HBO, say, to catch up on Big Little Lies. Notable Amazon Prime originals, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Jack Ryan, and Good Omens. Hulu. Hulu zigged when other services zagged earlier this year, cutting the monthly price of its basic ad-based service to $6 while competitors were raising rates. But the basic service is just one of Hulu's streaming options. The company's cable Hulu live TV service rose in price slightly, and the commercial-free version of Classic Hulu remained unchanged at $12 per month. What's new? Hulu, now controlled by Disney, is a great way to watch current TV series without paying for cable or cable replacement package. You get access to new episodes from most broadcast networks, plus a handful of cable shows, after they air. Notable Hulu originals, The Handmaid's Tale, Castle Rock, and The Looming Tower. New challengers, Apple TV Plus. Details of Apple's new subscription service were still a bit sketchy this summer. We didn't know the price or launch date as of early July, but it's clear that Apple TV would be home to an expansive and expensive-to-produce slate of original content. That includes a reboot of Steven Spielberg's 1980s series, Amazing Stories, a drama about a morning talk show starring Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston, Little Voice about the up-and-coming singer from director J.J. Abrams and songwriter Sarah Bareilles, and a thriller from director M. Night Shyamalan. Oprah Winfrey will create a series of documentaries. Apple is earmarking $2 billion for video commented, according to Rich Greenfield, analyst at equity research and strategy firm BTCG. In addition to binging on all that, you'll be able to subscribe to premium channels such as HBO and Showtime and watch them from the Apple TV app, similar to the way Amazon Prime Video channels work. In the spring, an Apple TV app rolled out to select 2018 to 2019 Samsung smart TVs and will soon be available on other smart TVs and streaming players as well. This means that the first time, folks won't need an Apple TV device to get content purchased for rental from iTunes on their TV. Disney. When it launches on November 12th, Disney will open the gates to use library of Blockbuster content for the relatively low price of $7 per month or $70 if you pay for the whole year. The entertainment goes far beyond Disney-branded material. The company owns Lucasfilms, all of the Star Wars movies, Marvel Studios, Avengers, Pixar, Toy Story, Coco, and 20th Century Fox, The Sound of Music, The Princess Bride, and TV shows, including The Simpsons. A lot of that material will be available at launch. Some of it is currently available on Netflix, but will appear only on Disney starting next year. Disney said it has plans for 10 original films and 25 original series, including several Avengers spinoff and the Mandalorian, a big-budget Jon Favreau-directed series out of the Star Wars universe. HBO Max. AT&T's Warner division says it will launch HBO Max in spring 2020. The company hasn't announced pricing, but speculation in the media is that the streaming service is likely to cost $16 or $17 per month, just above what the company charges for HBO Now. This could be a compelling option for many because the service will include the premium HBO service, a slate of new original programs, and titles from TV and film library of Warner Brothers. There will be content from AT&T's other properties, including Cartoon Network, CNN, DC Entertainment, TBS, CNN, TNT, and Turner Classic Movies. For example, the service will have the exclusive streaming rights to every episode of Friends and The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, original movies from producer Greg Bernini and Reese Witherspoon, and original series such as Love Life, starring Anna Kendrick, and The Flight Attendant, starring Kaley Cuoco. Back to the future. Why antennas are hot again? TV antennas are enjoying a resurgence in popularity. As of early 2019, 28% of all U.S. households with a broadband connection were using an antenna to get TV broadcast, according to research firm Parks Associates. Digital antennas are experiencing a resurgence as consumers consider over-the-air TV and online video services alternatives to traditional pay TV. Buy an antenna and you might be able to skip a pay TV service and just sign up for a streaming service. And they don't cost much. It's a one-time expense of about $20 to $80. You may get dozens of channels and picture quality might be better than with cable. But reception can vary based on where you live. Next year, some stations will start moving to a new over-the-air standard called Next Generation Broadcast TV. It's based on the Internet Protocol, IP, used by computers, so web content can be sent alongside traditional TV broadcasts. You may also get 4K video and high dynamic range HDR programming, which yields brighter, more colorful images. Another benefit is that signals can also be received on mobile devices such as smartphone and tablets. Today's TVs won't be able to receive these broadcasts, but don't worry, the switch will take years to complete. And even then, older TVs will be able to add an external tuner to play the new signals, and your current antenna will still work with those new signals. What you can get free. Ad-supported streaming services are among the fastest-growing segment of the world. Many public library cardholders can access Hoopla and Canopy to watch popular and indie movies. Amazon IMDb TV focuses on older movies and TV shows, plus IMDb programs such as celebrity interviews and documentaries. Pluto TV, owned by Viacom, gets some programming from that company's network. BET, Comedy Central, MTV, Nickelodeon, along with modern movies and older classics. People with a Roku streaming player or Roku TV can watch the Roku channel, which has a nice assortment of free movies and TV shows. And Sony Crackle, renamed Crackle Plus, has a library of older TV shows, popular older movies, and even some new original shows and movies. Snagfills streams movies, TV shows, and documentaries outside the mainstream. Tubi boasts a library of more than 15,000 movies and TV shows, including selections from the libraries of Lionsgate, MGM, and Paramount Pictures, plus Starz Digital. Vudu, best known as a pay-per-view service, has a rotating selection of three older movies and TV shows, and it's getting some original content later this year. And you might think of YouTube as the home of once user-created content, but the site also provides some free movies and documentaries in its free-to-watch section. One way to find the show you're looking for is to ask your digital TV. Modular voice assistants such as Amazon Alexa and Google Assistant are showing up on many smart TVs and streaming media players. You can use voice commands to search for movies, TV shows, actors, and apps, rather than pecking out a search with your TV remote. Certain systems also let you charge channels or pause a show. You may even be able to voice control lights and thermostats through the TV. But every system operates a bit differently, and not all apps support voice. Some TVs support multiple voice assistants that handle separate tasks, which can get confusing. Thankfully, more sets now route voice commands to the right assistant automatically. And I'm not going to be able to completely finish this today. We will finish it up next week, including help, how do I change the channel? And since we have a few seconds left, let's do a couple of letters from the thing. As a driving inspector instructor with 20 years' experience, I've been tracking the introduction of safety-related system in cars. Your article replies the first safety-related provides the first real-world data I've seen about positive impact of driver assistance systems on driver safety. I will be sure to include including information from the article in future classes. There was one key point that I did not find. Adverse weather conditions, snow, ice, rain, etc., can adversely affect their functioning. Every driver of a vehicle with ADAS knows to know this. And with that, we found ourselves just about running out of time for today's episode of the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. This program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.